I'm SP from the Starling Tribune, a show about the CW television show Arrow, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other action-packed geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics, the show where we look at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material. As always, I'm Chris, and today I've got Blair Farrell back. Blair, how are you today?
I'm good. I am the Joshua Spiracy into Patrick Hickey's towel set.
Today, I couldn't make myself split these up. We're just looking at all of, or at least most of, just in case I missed something, covering my butt here, the Turok the Dinosaur Hunter handheld series.
Yeah, there might have been a phone game or something towards the later, but I highly doubt it because the only one that was around the mobile era was the game that was produced by Disney, of all people. I think we're good.
So just for some super light Turok history, just in case you haven't listened to that episode with Patrick Hickey that I did before, which really you should go listen to that one. It's really good. But Turok is a title, not so much a character, kind of like in theory how Batman could be. And just like he comes back. Turok is a really old character that's been around since like the 50s. And you know, it's a Native American character most of the time who goes, gets these powers, and just kind of goes and hunts dinosaurs and stuff.
Yeah, for the purposes of a game, it's mostly the late 90s Valiant era, which was then bought by Acclaim when they took it over, which kind of changed everything, like you were explaining, to... Like, the Turok wasn't a person, it was a role, I think, originally, to my understanding. I could be wrong, as most of my knowledge comes from the video games. There was a game on Steam that came out this summer, actually based on the old comics, that has, like, it uses Turok and Ander, I believe, is a psychic character's name, and all the enemies are honkers and things like that, like in the comics. But in the Acclaim era, it's the mantle that's passed down through families with this thing called the Light Burden, which, to my understanding, is a satchel that contains the something from the end of the Big Bang that is what gives them their powers, or the ability, I guess, to haul out all their crazy guns that you gather throughout the series. I don't know. I like the context of why someone can carry so many weapons and just be able to run and climb and swim and stuff.
It's comics. It's just one of those things we're going to have to accept as fact.
For sure. And first-person shooters and action games at that.
So if you want to get the deep dive on that, go back and check out the Patrick Hickey episode. I will have a link to that down in the show notes so it's easier for you to go find it. But for this, we're just going to jump straight into the Game Boy games. Because there are five of them that we're looking at today.
Yes. As was the style at the time, if you had a game that became a hit, you spun it off into a franchise, whether you just kind of ported the original or did something new. It was really common throughout the Super Nintendo eras. You had everything from the Super NES Genesis era, as you had like Mortal Kombat would get shrunk down to a Game Boy game, and Street Fighter would get shrunk down. I remember in Christmas 1995, I got a port of Earthworm Jim, of all things, which is surprisingly better than it had any right to be. So, especially when it came to a company like Acclaim, who built their business on licenses, who would always want to put out as much product as possible. And then with the surprise success of Turok, which is something that, I mean, it's knowledge now that it's based on this long-running comic, but back then, the only comic most people had seen was in the back of the instruction manual where Turok defeats the main villain with a baseball riddle. That was probably their introduction to a Turok comic. So yeah. And then once it was a huge success, you know, it was then time to turn it into a bona fide franchise with sequels and spin-offs and handheld games and other media. I have a Adon action figure hanging on my wall that I found in a local used game store. So yeah, it was, you know, the big franchise push, like, was the another kind of trend at the time when you had like the success of Tomb Raider and there was toys and Resident Evil and the Marvel versus Capcom games and Zelda. So it was logically you would then start getting handheld games wherever you can put a new Turok product out.
So the first one we're looking at here is Turok Battle of the Bionosaurs. Like most of the games here, it was developed by Bit Managers, published by Acclaim. This one came out in 97 for the big gray brick Game Boy.
Yeah, it was one of the pretty late era game. This was when interest in the system was really dying down. And it was right before kind of the Pokemon craze of 1998, which made everyone dig out their Game Boys and pay attention to them again. I find this one interesting because this is the only game in this entire handheld spin-off sub-series where they gave the game a different name, but it's the same plot and kind of structure as Turok Dinosaur Hunter, whereas from 2 onwards, they carry the same name, but they're completely different stories with a new line of villains. And actually, it's interesting. I was just realizing I was researching the old Nintendo Power reviews and they call it War of the Bionosaurs in the Nintendo Power review. That's fascinating how that one snuck by.
And that's just kind of a little nitpicky thing that I think I kind of get hung up on one way or the other a lot, where these handheld games really can't do what the home console games can do. So if you try to remake it exactly, it's not going to work. If you try to do a new thing, then you're having to make a new game. Might as well start over. But I really appreciate on this one how they at least have the naming difference so that you're not going in there expecting an exact copy of the N64 game. You know, not that any of us did.
Yeah, it's interesting. When you had the Nintendo and Super Nintendo era, it was a lot easier to just kind of make something similar. Recently they put out a collection of the Disney Aladdin Lion King games, and they have the Game Boy versions where it was a shrunken down as best as it could side-scroller. But in the case of Turok, you had to create, which started life as a full 3D game that was pushing boundaries for its time, and then turned into a side scroller. But then it works because it's the same game. It has the same levels. It has the same hunt for keys, hunt for parts of an ultimate weapon, even the same bosses. And it doesn't really it does a really good job of capturing what made the exploration heavy action of the N64 game work on a Game Boy of all things. So for the very first Game Boy Turok, I have a tremendous amount of respect of what they were able to accomplish, especially at a time when interest in the Game Boy was probably at an all-time low.
And it's not like you can really pull off a first-person shooter on a Game Boy too well anyway. I mean, they did it with Doom. which I just know from seeing covers of it. So, like, I haven't played it myself, but that's about it.
And I know the big first-person game was something called, it was X, made by Dylan Cuthbert, who did Starbox, and that kind of pushed the system as far as it can go. You would not have, like, the crazy platforming and some Twitch action from that Turok kind of made its name on. X was, I think, more or less just a, you're in a vehicle and it was on rails and you were just kind of shooting enemies. So I don't think that would have been a good fit for what this was, unless they made a game where you were in a vehicle, which happens later on, which we'll get later on down the line. But I think the direction they took was pretty smart, and how they translated everything to the 2D Game Boy structure.
Yeah, most of this game is side-scrolling, platforming, run and gun, shooter, whatever you want to call it there, kind of fits in all of those. You do have some ones that are more like bird's eye view kind of things. But for the most part, you're running through the level, finding dinosaurs and bad guys and shooting them. Which is a lot more fun than I just made it sound.
Yeah, the only part where it stumbles sometimes, there are some tricky jumps that can cause you to lose a bunch of lives. But there's a generous password system. And so you don't really use that much progress. So you can just, you know, if you die too much, you've just put in a password, and I'm pretty sure you get like all of your ammo and every weapon you've collected up until that point. And even so you hold the select button and hit left and right to cycle between your weapons, which kind of slows everything down. But at least when I was playing that, I think I played it on easy. In my most recent going back to it, and then when I reviewed it a couple years ago, when I reviewed all of the Acclaim comic book games that they produced in the N64 era, where then you're able to stop and think about what weapon you need to kill what enemy, as you'll need something like a grenade launcher to kill, say, like a larger dinosaur, but it's never jumping on top of you. You have a chance to kind of sit there and think about what weapon you need, which is, again, using smart design within the limitations of what they had to work with when making this game.
And I think understanding the limitations of what you can pull off is definitely a good sign here.
Yeah, most certainly. And then, I mean, this was fairly well received. I mean, from what little information, I mean, there probably wasn't a lot of reviews and coverage for this. It's probably hard to find an online review, but I mean, going from my memory, as I remember reading the reviews for this in Nintendo Power, and then I found it yesterday, it was around a 6.5, which is probably where I would be at. I mean, I would probably be around 6.5, 7. It's not perfect or a classic per se, but as far as handheld games go, it's worth checking out if you like the N64 games, or just a big fan of the Game Boy platform.
Moving on, we have Turok 2 Seeds of Evil, which is where we start to get them to be super, in name at least, tied in with their regular home console releases.
Yeah, it was one of the earliest games for the Game Boy Color. Still wasn't a dedicated cartridge, so it came in the black cart, which meant it could be played in both the original Game Boy and the Game Boy Color. Of course, it played a lot better on the Game Boy Color because you had that extra, well, color from that was provided by the system. This is where the first Battle of Dinosaurs was kind of just an exact retelling of a game, even using the same villain. This is where things kind of shift towards making the Game Boy games almost its own series. There's a weird bad guy called the Adamantine Ordnance or something. It's just a really name for the guy, bad guys. But something I at least appreciate with this one is that when you start off, you're just Joshua Fireseed. You haven't exactly gotten the Turok powers yet. So you're kind of running through city streets, and your first objective is to get the light burden, which then allows you, kind of like Bart versus the Space Mutants on the Nintendo, to kind of see bad guys, as you can use some type of vision that sees people because they're hiding as human beings. So in my headcanon kind of way, I guess this is Turok 2 on the Game Boy Color is kind of the unofficial sequel to the N64 game that leads into the N64 game. But I think it was, I'm putting more thought into it than what was thought of for it at the time.
And I think that's a nice little touch, because a lot of times when you get these games, you're just kind of thrown in. And I mean, that's fine when it's Spider-Man and Batman and characters that everybody knows about. But you get somebody like this and you're having a new person be Turok. I like that little bit of here's why that you're a new human at this point.
Yeah. Because at the start of Turok 2 on the N64, you're just, you fall through a portal and then some alien woman just kind of tells you, okay, this bad thing has happened, but you don't know. It's the kind of the N64 trajectory, they didn't really segue well. I think even with like the first game, it's very confusing because it's the in-game character, at least on the North American box art, doesn't match who is on the cover, and the manual kind of sells it as kind of the Turok of the 90s, but then the character you're playing isn't. So I kind of like how the Game Boy game kind of eases you in for those who kind of get into like the new lore that Acclaim developed when they bought the franchise and everything from Valiant.
So this game again is a bunch of side-scrolling action-y platformer, side-scrolling shooty levels. You do get to ride on dinosaurs this time, which is always a big plus in my book, though.
It sounds a lot cooler than what it actually is. It's a nice change of pace. I remember the sections, you're on the back of a Velociraptor, which is, I mean, that just sounds inherently cool, but then you're controlling it and it doesn't control very well. And then you're on the back of a Pteranodon at one point. The best I can say about that is, I mean, it's definitely sounds cool, but it kind of breaks up the game, which just really is kind of boring compared to the first one. It's a little bit less ambitious in its design. As the first one, you had levels very much like the N64 game, where you had lots of different paths and things to find. It wasn't just a straight shot from A to B. But in Turok 2, that's essentially what it is. It's just you go from start in the end, and there's a bit more. I think there's a few points where you go in and out of caves and different paths, but it's a lot easier to understand, which is, I guess, good for people who could have easily gotten frustrated with the first game, which I can understand, as it is a bit challenging to navigate. I know when I finished it for a review series I did, I used a lot of YouTube tutorials for assistance on where to find the keys and the chronoceptor pieces. So in a way, I guess I appreciate that a little bit more. It's just a fairly run-of-the-mill side-scrolling action game. You kind of forget about it the second that you finish it.
It's kind of suffers a little bit like the Crow movies did, where if you take out the first one, the second one suddenly looks a lot better. But when you consider that the first one already happened, it's like, okay, why are we doing this again?
Yeah. I mean, those people really like Turok 2 on consoles. I'm not one of those people. I think it's very bloated. So I guess when compared to that, I kind of like how simplistic it is. And I guess it can be a positive thing depending on what you're looking for. It's just that, I don't know, when the Game Boy Color came out, it was certainly, you could do a lot more than with the original Game Boy, but then it just kind of felt like everything else that came before wasn't really the first game you would pick up in 98 when you finally got access to the first ever Color Game Boy they've been waiting for since the first one came out.
So we continue our little downward trend here with Turok Rage Wars. Again, Bits Managers and Acclaim. And again, just a year after the previous game.
Yeah, this is Acclaim's attempt to turn this into something like Tomb Raider, or I guess what people see as Call of Duty now, where it was an annual franchise, where they weren't ready for a Turok 3, but then they put out something that was multiplayer focused on consoles, but then the Game Boy game doesn't have any multiplayer functionality whatsoever. And where, you know, the Turok 2 took a step down from Battle of Bionosaurs in that it was a basic side scroller. This here, things that even more simpler, as you're just mindlessly, it almost turns it into like a brawler of sorts, where you're just going left to right, hitting enemies. There's very little jumps. And then there are some frustrating overhead levels that go on for a little bit too long, where somewhere you have to like wait for the screen to scroll. And if you die, then you have to go all the way back to the start, which is annoying. And it's interesting because this is the first dedicated Game Boy Color game from this series, which can only be played on that system, but it feels in a lot of respects more primitive than the Game Boy original.
And this isn't a case where like going from the Game Boy to the Game Boy Color means people had to really learn an entirely new system like they would have had to do with any of the home console stuff. I mean, a Game Boy Color is still largely a Game Boy with better graphical stuff. It's not like they had to relearn a whole programming language or anything to know how to make games for this thing.
True. I guess the best thing that can be said is, with respect to the console Rage Wars, it's a game that hasn't aged particularly well because it's just really a multiplayer game, which was a big draw back in the N64 era. I mean, that was the selling point of the system with the four controller ports. But at least with this game, it's more of a, I mean, there's no multiplayer functionality whatsoever. It's just a one-player game. So it has a little bit more value than what the console game was, is you're not going to really find many people who are going to want to play four-player death matches and Turok Rage Wars on consoles in 2019. But to fly through a Game Boy game is probably a little bit easier or more palatable, as you're just something that you can do on your own in your own time. But I mean, that's not exactly the highest praise either.
This one is more of a top-down game. So, I mean, they did make a new game engine for it, or at least use a new game engine for this one. So it's not like they're just totally recycling what they'd already done for the previous games, but I just don't think it works.
Yeah, there's a new mechanic where you can get armor and different types of ammunition, but from what I remember, it doesn't really change that much. It just kind of makes everything tedious to get through.
You've still got a password system to save. I can't really fault anybody for that. You know, you're making the game cheaper. That's fine. Save some money for the consumer on the back end of that, too.
Yeah, and the passwords are never obscenely long either. And something I love now with the era of smartphones is that you don't need to copy down a password. Like, I remember playing this and fishing it a few years ago, and my phone was just filled of Turok Rage Wars passwords. Then just snap a picture and then just type it in whenever I need it, as opposed to fumbling around for like a pen and notepad and trying to read my terrible handwriting and things like that.
We're going to sit here and try to learn how to write like something better than a drunk 3-year-old while we drop some promos for a few other shows.
Here, in the forests of Borneo's tropical lowlands, a clever creature spends its days swinging from tree to tree with its long, powerful arms.
What are you doing? Where are the cameras?
What do you mean? I...
What do you mean? We're recording the promo for Play Comics to invite his listeners to check out Life, Death, and Taxonomy, the podcast that delivers 30 minutes of interesting animal info, like how there are ants that farm fungus and fish that fuse their faces to each other.
And the podcast that delivers humorous and ridiculous size comparisons, yes. But isn't this an audio promo?
Yes.
So why are we on location in Borneo? We could have been in the deluxe studio.
Because we're serious method podcasters, that's why.
All right, carry on.
Listen to Life, Death, and Taxonomy on iTunes, Google Play, and anywhere podcasts can be found.
Hey everyone, I'm Danny, over here at the Wheel Weaves podcast, where we're diving into the series, The Wheel of Time. Are you a super fan? Awesome. Never heard of it? No problem. The Wheel of Time is one of the top-selling fantasy series ever, and it was picked up by Amazon to be the next big TV show. Our podcast is safe for first-time readers because it's made by me, a first-time reader. I'm joined by my co-host Brett, a longtime fan, who is acting as my tour guide as we journey into the series for chapter analysis, character breakdown, and probably wrong predictions. Find us at the Wheel Weaves podcast on social media and listen in on your favorite podcasting app.
Those are some great shows you should check out, but first let's finish up with this one. So next up we have Turok 3, Shadow of Oblivion. Again, Bits Managers and Acclaim, and again, just a year later.
This one, I find this one a little bit interesting for kind of all the wrong reasons, is because, so I went and looked at all the ratings on the Turok Game Boy games compared to the N64 games. All the N64 games were rated M, and the Game Boy games were rated E or K to A. But on the cover of this game, like it is on the N64 game, there's like the O was replaced by like a fetus, which I find really weird for a rated everyone Game Boy Color game. And I mean, the whole premise of the console game was that Oblivion was the villain who was released at the end of Turok 2, but this game has nothing to do with Oblivion. It's just kind of following what the other Game Boy games had done in its own universe, like divorced from the console games. So the other games kind of fit just by, like, Seeds of Evil and Rage Wars could be anything. You can just kind of do what you want with those titles. But then when you have Shadow of Oblivion, which is in reference to the villain Oblivion, it kind of doesn't work for the Game Boy Color game. But again, I just think it was just trying to make another Game Boy game and not really caring that much about the overall lore of the Turok series.
That one just kind of irks me, because you had the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Game Boy series where it's its own distinct thing. So it had been done before. It had been shown to relatively work before. You know, you can have a handheld series completely distinct from the home console series. Everything is going to sell fine. You might even sucker some parents into buying both of them. Because I know my parents didn't want to get me College Slam on Game Boy because I had it on Genesis. But they could have pointed to this and said, hey, this is a different Turok game. Look, it has a different title.
And the big selling point of Turok 3 is that in the opening moments of the game, Joshua Fireseed, who was the star of all of the Game Boy games and the second game in Rage Wars, he's killed in the opening minutes, and then you can be two of, I think it's his brother and sister. I can't remember. I haven't played the Turok 3 console game in a while. And the game is radically different depending on which brother or which sibling you pick. But here it's just your Fireseed. And there's a tank name. The big hook is that you're going to Teenage Mutant Turtles because like the original NES game where you kind of had the turtle van to go around the city, or you have a jeep and a tank where you have to navigate an overworld and then find the stages, kind of exactly like the Nintendo game. It doesn't really add much of anything. It's kind of tough to control as it has that tank control for, I mean, which you were in a tank, so it makes sense. And from games like Resident Evil that most people couldn't really figure out, or a lot of people had difficulty with. But then after that, it's just more of the same stuff from Turok Rage Wars, which wasn't really that to begin with.
Tank controls, man, that's like the worst pair of words in the entire world. But again, but you're right, it does kind of work here because you are actually in a tank, or, you know, at least some kind of vehicle. But I think this game gets really interesting from the fact that this is the last one Bits Managers did. So they knew it.
Yeah, this kind of the end of the era. Yeah.
I was watching a video over the past couple days of just somebody going through and reviewing all of them. And he actually got to talk to one of the developers, I think it was, of the games. And it was just so cool hearing that perspective of, yes, they were working on the games. They knew that this was it. They knew that they weren't going to get another shot at it. So, you know, let's make this the best thing we can make it, because this is going to be the last thing people see from us. And this is still what they put out.
Yeah, I mean, that era of games is kind of fascinating. As you think about, there's a lot of really well-produced Game Boy Color and Game Boy Advance games. I think of Mike Micah from Digital Eclipse, who helped make, they made Dragon's Lair for Game Boy Color, and it's literally the arcade game that they made work. It's a work of magic. But then on the other hand, you probably just had people like Bits who were given a shoestring budget to kind of keep churning out games with not really that much time to innovate between. And then, you know, on the way out, it's like, what tanks? Why not? This is going to be the last thing we do. We might as well just go crazy with it.
And I know it might kind of sound like I hate the Game Boy, which is not true at all. I mean, Link's Awakening is always going to be my favorite Zelda game, no matter what happens. I can't tell you how many times I've played through Kirby's Dream Land. Game Boy just has a really wide range of what works and what doesn't. And it's hard to hit that magical working point on a Game Boy, because you have to work within batteries and that extremely small screen size. And just so many things they tried to port down to a Game Boy that really had no business going down that small.
Well, it's not just like licensed product either. When you play something like a Castlevania Anniversary Collection that came out this past summer, and they have included Castlevania the Adventure, or the Castlevania Adventure, depending on what you want to call it, for the Game Boy. And it was a tough learning for people, even like Konami, as people were kind of expecting, well, we'll just do the Nintendo game just in a smaller format. But then you had to compensate for screen size and, you know, being able to see different things. I remember I never actually played Dr. Mario on Game Boy, on the original Game Boy. I remember seeing it at a Canadian Tire and thinking, well, how does that work when there's no color? Because the whole thing is matching the colors of the pills with the viruses. So it was a challenging environment. But I think, I know Mike on Twitter was talking about how if the Cats movie coming out next month, if it came at a different time, there would be a bunch of studios bidding on the Game Boy Color rights or the Game Boy Advance rights. And it definitely would be a thing that would be happening.
Yeah, keeping things in context here is really important, because, I mean, we can sit here and say, oh, these games look bad, they play bad, or anything. But when they came out, I mean, they really weren't that bad. It's like all these 3D games where you give them to a 12-year-old today, and they're going to last maybe 5 minutes, and that's it. but that's what we grew up with. That's kind of the only thing we knew, so we didn't know any better. And that's just how things were.
For sure. And I mean, there was a Game Boy was something that people could produce a lot of software for really cheap, and sometimes you got really interesting things like recreations of Mega Man X and the Metal Gear Solid games, and other times you just got things that were probably just rushed to market, like the Turok games, because there's a console game coming out this month or every year, so we have to get a Game Boy Color game and go out alongside it.
So finally, we have Turok Evolution, and we're just looking at the Game Boy Advance one here.
Yes, we're not looking at the console game, which has a cybernetic Texan riding a T-Rex named Tobias Bruckner, who went to the butt of EGM awards jokes.
I promise you, we'll come back to that one later.
Oh, it's a peach.
You still have a claim publishing this. I probably don't need to say that ever again for Turok. I don't think they're ever going to give that up. But you do have RFX Interactive making the game here for the Game Boy Advance. Off the top of my head, I don't know anything else that they've ever made.
From their Mobi Games listing, because this is, yeah, it's something that I looked into. It's a lot of licensed games like Ants and Toon Sylvania and Inspector Gadget and other things like that. But this game is something else. Like, one of the things when I started writing about comic book games and discovering them, I love finding games like this one that came out and no one really talked about, and then you find out that it's some crazy weird gem. Because Turok Evolution on consoles, it's such a mess. Like, it was meant to be the acclaim saving grace, kind of like what the first Turok was on the N64. Is a bunch of bad decisions like DMX XXX and wanting to put people to sell ad space on people's gravestones, which is something you'll discover later on. They were in hard shape and they didn't last long after this. So you don't expect much coming for the Game Boy Advance version of Turok Evolution. But then you put in your Game Boy and you find it, oh, this is Contra and Metal Slug with really nice sprite work. It's not as polished, but it's something that I think a lot more people should kind of at least watch a video of and maybe try it somehow the first couple of levels. Because it's a pretty impressive game, especially when coming off of kind of the trajectory of where the Turok Game Boy Color games went.
I mean, this game looks good. I love Metal Slug. So essentially having that with a different name is not a big problem for me at all.
And it's so much inspiration. It's like when you shoot enemies, they kind of just like burst into goo and dissolve on the ground. And it's very much inspired by Metal Slug. And I love the character design as they went back to the first Turok Tel set for this. Then it's supposed to be set, I believe, in the late 1800s, if I'm not mistaken, but his design is very much just hardcore 90s action star, and he's like wearing like track pants with like a red stripe down the side and just like the denim vest and the rippling muscles popping out. It's very authentic.
Again, this game does go side-scrolling 2D stuff. Again, because that's what the Game Boy can do compared to the GameCube and the PS2 and the Xbox. But it just works so well here.
Yeah, and you had the added power of the Game Boy Advance, and it was in the second year. And what people really wanted from that system, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I got into it, was just you wanted a Super Nintendo in the palm of your hands, which is why you saw, like, Contra come to the system and Mega Man and Castlevania eventually. Well, Castlevania was their launch. Mega Man side-scrolling games came eventually, and Turok very much fit into that kind of mold, and it was very unexpected for that franchise which is, I don't know, say what you will about kind of what happened to Acclaim in the Turok franchise. I remember when reflecting on all of these games, how kind of there was a lot of ideas thrown there at the series, and some worked, some didn't. Because you have like a multiplayer game, you had vehicles and more games, and here you end up with kind of one of the last things they ever did was a Contra game. And it's definitely as good as either of those. It's a little bit rough, and there's a lot of cheap sections, a lot of cheap jumps from what I remember. But, I mean, it's worth checking out if you have any love for those series that it takes inspiration from.
The main thing I wish is that it was easier to do multiplayer on a Game Boy Advance, but that's really more of a system problem than a game problem, so I can't fault it too much here for having a crappy multiplayer experience.
True, yeah. It actually did have, like those games, it did have the ability to play with a second character. You can even play as him instead of the Turok character, but I think the only difference is their melee weapon. Like, Turok has a tomahawk, whereas the second character named Jun, D-G, or D-J-U-N-N, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, kind of has like a spiked yo-yo weapon that's almost like out of the Tecmo's Rider. But if, I mean, how many people, it's such a rare circumstance where you'd find a person who had Turok, two people who have this game and a link cable in that close proximity to one another, so it's not really something that would have happened on a regular occurrence.
And just the jump from Game Boy Color to Game Boy Advance visuals is huge.
Oh yeah, like there's so much detail put into the boss characters and the environments. Like, it's astounding, really. And these people are effects who were, I mean, they didn't really do much after this. And what they did here is really impressive.
And it's surprising that, like, this game isn't talked about more. I would say it's
because it's overshadowed by how bad the console game turned out. So that probably has a lot to do with it, to tell you the truth. But I know that's kind of the great thing about doing shows like this and finding these games, is that sometimes you play a lot of not so great licensed games, but every so often you find that Turok Evolution that's a big surprise.
Really, I'm surprised there aren't a lot more shows that'll be like crapping on the home console version of Evolution and then just bringing up the fact that the Game Boy Advance one is the best version of it. It seems like most of the reviewers I watch that end up talking about crappy things love to find that one weird version that nobody thought would be any good compared to everything else, and it's just amazing.
I think because,
I mean, it's the negativity and lampooning kind of the
bad game probably gets more
views than, hey, this is cool. Well, a lot of these games were just kind of messed over. It was just like, well, here's a represent puzzle game. But I mean, just looking at the same Metacritic you had in the review, not one of Nintendo Power was an 84, IGN was an 8. These are way better numbers than what's Rock Evolution but, I mean.
And I really liked, you know, having you come on for this one too, because I tend to just kind of gloss over the handheld versions of games, no matter which handheld thing they're actually on. Because when I try to find people for guests for these, nobody is sitting here saying, oh yes, I really loved the Game Boy version of Turok, when they can say, oh yes, I really loved the 64 version of Turok.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's important. I have a binder full of loose cartridges, and let me tell you, there's a lot of bad ones in there, but sometimes, you know, you get the good ones. I did a video for Electric Playgrounds, or I was allowed to do a small video for Electric Playgrounds. It was one of the early games I kind of discovered, and something that's going to be a treat for you much later on is Spider-Man Shattered Dimensions on the Nintendo DS, which is kind of a Metroid-style game. But most people were just, you know, paying attention to the console game. So every so often, you do get that happen. And then I'm writing a book on the Avengers games, and for a lot of the ones that came out
that tied into the first phase of the MCU, like the original Iron Man and Thor and Iron Man 2, the DS games are way better than what you find on consoles.
Those are going to be so much fun when I get there.
Get them while you can. The prices are going up. And I'm not sure how hard DS games are to emulate.
Yeah, I haven't looked at emulating any of those. I don't look at emulating anything. What am I talking about at all? No, I haven't looked at DS games at all. I know I'm good up through PS1, 64, that kind of stuff. I mean, once I get past there, it's a little touchy as far as I know. But seeing as how this is still a Play Comic show, just compared to what you know of the comics and stuff, what do you think these games really get right?
I mean, for the first couple, it kind of brought back, at least for the first two, maybe three, like the pulp adventure aspect of the original, where you're just kind of one character against nature and villains and things like that. I guess the thing about the Turok franchise, as it was envisioned by Acclaim, is that, I mean, when they're making the games, it's right as whatever they wanted it to be, because they kind of, instead of Acclaim's output on the Super Nintendo was picking up Midway arcade games and picking up licenses, but then for the N64 era and PlayStation era, they just bought a comic company and just made their own comic book games, and then for a short time just published comics and just re-envisioned them as they saw fit to fit into what they wanted to make for their games. So I guess in that regards, it's whatever Acclaim wants it to be, but there is still some aspects of kind of like the pulp origins, at least in the original, where you're just, you know, riding dinosaurs and hunting dinosaurs and exploring the jungles. And a lot of the environments, even as they introduce things like tanks and bases, you still get a lot of tropical jungle environments and things like that.
Yeah, everything makes sense from the world of the comics that they've created, which, you know, better happen when they're the ones publishing it. Because worst case, they can make the game technically wrong and then go change the comics around to make the game right again.
Yeah.
What do you think these games really get wrong?
I mean, they try to introduce plots, but I think to the kind of original Turok games, it's very minimal and you just kind of forget about it. I mean, again, going back to the Turoks 2 through 3, including Rage Wars, you just have this villain called the Adamantine. Like, what are those words? It's just like you threw a dartboard and just, okay, these are the bad guys. I mean, the Turok console can have the most graceful transition from the game, but they were at least trying a little and kept somewhat of a continuity. Here it's just, these bad guys are back. They're trying to invade Earth and you have to stop them because it's your job.
Yeah. I mean, I really just wish that, you know, we could have gotten more of a comics connection. That's the only thing I really see wrong about these. To be fair, I couldn't find the manuals for these. So maybe there's that connection kind of in the manual, even if they're just explaining what things are and not explicitly saying that it's from a comic.
The only one I have complete in box is Turok 2, and I don't think I looked at that a couple of months ago. I don't think there's really that much there other than what's presented in the game. They'll give a brief rundown of what a dinosaur is or what the bad guys are, but I don't think it really gets that much in depth, and it's all just big blobs of uninteresting text.
So if you had somebody who wanted to get into the Turok comics, would you hand them any of these games as a bit of a primer course?
Maybe the first one, because it kind of, again, does kind of capture the, you know, man out of time, simple stories of just going through kind of jungle environments and hunting dinosaurs, but not so much the rest of them, as it's kind of just story definitely takes a backseat to everything else. There's some brief setup and that's really it. You're not going to really understand that much about the Turok universe by playing a lot of these games. Maybe the second one, from like the first level where you kind of get the light burden, which gives them, or gives Joshua, the mantle, but that's really it. And yeah, I probably not, definitely not.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. Outside of the first two, I mean, maybe the Game Boy Advance one, just to show the other character.
Yeah, and it would have been cool getting some knowledge of the original if they would have even just used the name of Turok's partner from original comics back in the day, instead of just making a whole new character who's not even in the console version of Evolution. But I mean, that's more thought that I'm putting into it now than maybe what was put into the plot back then. Again, the villain is a cybernetic Texan riding a T-Rex.
Which is still just amazing to think about. So, Blair, it's been great having you on. If people want to hear more from you, where else can they find you around the internet?
Yeah, it's been great coming back. I love doing these shows. You can find me on Twitter at Blarcade, B-L-A-R-C-A-D-E. It's like arcade, only with B-L in front. Any projects I'm working on, you'll definitely see in my feed. There's a lot of, it's mostly just cute animal pictures and anything about comic book games. You can also pick up my book, The Web of Spider-Man Games, which you can get a link to in my pinned tweet at my Twitter account, and visit Comic Gamers Assemble if you want to read reviews for every game that we've talked about in this, and it will maybe sway your decision on whether or not you want to try it yourselves.
We will have links to all that down in the show notes, just because following links is so much easier than trying to spell things. And as always, if you want to hear more from me, you can head on over to Twitter at PlayComicsCast. You can head on over to PlayComics.com to check out all the show notes for the show. You can also go to PlayComics.com/Facebook group to get the easiest way into the Facebook group, because I can remember to tell you that one and not the actual Facebook name, but it redirects, don't worry. If you want to help support the show, we do have a merch store over on playcomics.com. You can also go check out the Patreon, which is just patreon.com/playcomics. I hope. I'll have to check that later, because I forgot. And don't forget that Play Comics is part of the Gunna Geek Network, home to such wonderful shows as Game Life Balance US, which is a lifestyle podcast hosted by Cody Goff and Jonathan Martin, two longtime frenemies who are trying to juggle their gaming projects and hobbies with the increasing demands of adult life. So every other week, they review a retro game from the Super NES Classic Mini and have surprisingly thoughtful discussions on how modern games and older games play different roles in adult life. It's a really great show. You should go check it out. And if you like the music that we're rudely talking on top of, head on over to soundcloud.com/best-day to check out Best Day's music. Most of all, just grab a game or a whole stack of them to go with your stack of comics and go find yourself a new favorite character.